En cada nivel te motiva y reta para que avances de nivel. Pero la verdadera clave son los profesores Vaughan. Su método de enseñanza es lo que realmente nos diferencia. Los cursos online Vaughan cuentan con los mismos profesores apasionados que desde hace más de 40 años nos han hecho diferentes. Descubre las ventajas de nuestro método online probándolo. Así que os invito a entrar en grupovaughan.com y poneros a prueba.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores? Con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana. Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready? Start the class.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Más miedo le da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso, Vaughan ha desarrollado sus clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher.
Haz una pausa y disfruta mejorando, aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833.
Si tiene hijos recién licenciados o en su último año de carrera, asegúrese de que resuelvan, ahora que pueden, su dominio del inglés. Es importante quitar este problema de en medio ahora, antes de que entren en el mercado laboral. Si no, lo más probable es que nunca lo resuelvan.
Eso es lo más probable si sigues dejando el inglés. Para más adelante. Sí, sí, ya lo solucionaré. Decimos eso constantemente. Llámenos 911-335833. 911-335833.
Con nuestro MIP, nuestro Máster en Inglés Profesional, resolverás de por vida tu preocupación por el inglés. Podrás desenvolverte sin problemas. Quítate en medio el inglés ahora, en cuanto puedas. El Máster en Inglés Profesional de Vaughan.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and on this program, I'm going to talk about the pilgrims. The pilgrims who went from the old world to the new world. This is the continuation of my last program. On my last program, I talked about how difficult it was for them to live in England. England with the established church, the Anglican church, they wanted to dissent. They did not want to participate in this church. They were separatists, not Puritans, not reformers, but pilgrims, separatists who thought that the established church was beyond salvation and completely corrupt. These people were allowed, finally, to emigrate. First, they went to Holland, and they were there for something like 11 or 12 years. But to their horror, they discovered that, first, the Dutch people who surrounded them were pleasure-loving, not at all austere, and did not share their values. Secondly, the
children were becoming more Dutch than English in the sense of, well, not at all puritanical. Now, they needed to put an ocean between themselves and the corruption of the old world. And so they did this. They crossed in a ship called the Mayflower. Now, originally there were two ships, the Speedwell and the Mayflower, but the Speedwell began to leak. It began to take on water. They could not achicar. They could not bail out the Speedwell. It had to go back home. But 120 of these people, plus the ship's crew and so forth, well, they spent the first winter there in Massachusetts, and half of them died. There were 50 survivors, and there they had to find their way. They knew very little about agriculture, almost nothing. They would not have survived without the help of the natives there. And I would like to now talk about this from the perspective of the natives, the Wampanoag people. About 40,000 of them in 67 different villages in that area. However, as I say, there had been a European presence in the New World for at least 130 years, probably much longer, but European ways, European diseases, especially with the establishment of New Spain and so forth, and they were extending, and they had reached this area in the 1700s, early 1700s, right before the Puritans came. There was absolute devastation, a great dying. Enormous numbers of people died. Some tribes did better than others. Some tribes were absolutely devastated. Others did relatively better. The Wampanoag people, the original, the ones that were next to Plymouth, the ones who became the friends of the English in Plymouth, the Wampanoag people were particularly hard hit by this devastation. And their enemies, their ancestral enemies, their rivals, the Narragansett people, had been less affected. And so there was already this upset in the balance of power. In any case, remember that the enemy of your enemy is your friend, and this is true at any time. More than enough reason for an allegiance with the newcomers, with the English, against the Narragansett people. In any case, the Great Dying between, say, 1616 and 1619, mysterious diseases completely destroying the tribes. Now, during that time, there was the expedition that I mentioned earlier by Sir Fernandino Georges. There, they talk about a region devastated by war and by disease. The people that remained are described as practically like zombies, so afflicted with the plague, that the country is left void, empty, void of inhabitants. 2 years later, another English expedition said that the ancient plantations are empty. The buildings are rotting and abandoned. And then came the pilgrims, including an ancestor of mine. I had actually, according to my father, who was the great genealogist, there were several of my ancestors on that very first ship, the Mayflower. And the ones that didn't come on the first ship came on the second ship. By the time Boston was established, just 10 years later, by the time Boston was established, practically all of my ancestors had already come from the old world. So, yeah. One of my ancestors, he met a local girl when he was in Holland. And so, they had a son, and they did survive that first winter. One of the few that survived the first winter, and one of the few that triumphed because of a Native American called Tisquantum. Let me tell you about Tisquantum, the savior of my family. How about that? He was born in about 1580. They don't know a lot about his early life. He was captured as a young man on the coast. He was captured by George Weymouth in about the year 1605, when he was a young man of 25. Weymouth was an Englishman whose commission was to explore the coastline. His financial backers wanted him to make a profit, and part of that profit was to take back native people. So Tisquantum was captured, brought to England, along with four other people. Now, while he was in England, he was exhibited. He learned English. He worked as a sailor, all sorts of things. He knew London. Evidently, he knew London quite well. But again, back home in 1614. In 1614, another English explorer called Thomas Hunt arrived, and using false pretenses, attracted another 24 Native Americans on his ship, saying that he was going to bargain, right? Negociar, that he was going to bargain with them. Tisquantum was among those. Hunt locked them below deck and went to Spain and sold these people as slaves. Tisquantum found a way to escape from slavery in Spain and go back to London, a place he knew. Now, he returned to America in 1619, this time working as an interpreter for Captain Thomas Dermer. Unfortunately, he arrived during the Great Dying, and his tribe was no longer. They had all been eliminated. His home village was lost, gone. Tisquantum was captured by the Wampanoag, and, living as a slave among them. In any case, when the Mayflower arrived, Tisquantum walked into the middle of the village and began to speak English. And yes, he was the salvation of the people there. And the Wampanoag and Squanto were there when the Mayflower arrived. They were there to stay unlike previous explorations, right? They had established themselves, and this place looked like it was going to be permanent. I mentioned on the earlier program, the first thing they did was to desecrate local graves. The second thing they did was to break into Indian stores of food and take the corn, take the beans, take whatever they needed. Now, the local chief, the local sachem, all right, cacique, the local sachem, a man named Massasoit, knew all of this and tolerated it because he believed that, well, they could, that perhaps an allegiance would be more useful than aggression, at least initially. And the fact is that later on, Massasoit and the locals, and of course Squanto and the people, the pilgrims, they were going to become very, very close. Their enemies were the Narragansett people. I mentioned earlier that the Narragansetts had sent the head of the Plymouth colony, William Bradford. They had sent him a message in the form of arrows wrapped in the skin of a rattlesnake, right? Serpiente cascabel. And that Bradford had in turn sent the same skin with gunpowder, right? Polvarin. And that this message evidently was understood. The Narragansett did not act hostile. There was a truce, let's put it that way, tregua, between the Narragansett and the Plymouth colony, but not between the Narragansett and the Wampanoag. The Wampanoag were nervous about this. Again, for many years, the United States has been celebrating the tradition of Thanksgiving, El Día de Acción de Gracias. The original was in 1621. Thanksgiving today, it's a very emotional holiday for many people. It's the time we can go to our families. It's very much a family sort of get together, and it involves people crossing the country. Remember that in the United States, it is not customary to live very close to your family. You go from one state to another. 50 million people go from state to state every year. And, this kind of, intergenerational home that is so typical in Spain is relatively rare in the United States, but we have this family vacation. Now, in a family situation, you need at least two holidays. You need one holiday for your family and one holiday for the in-laws. In Spain, quite often, Christmas is for one family and New Year's is for the other family, either yours or your in-laws' family, right? It's one and the other, one and the other. You trade. There are negotiations, okay? But there have to be two holidays. The fact is that in the United States, Thanksgiving fulfills this purpose. We have Christmas and we have Thanksgiving. That's the other one. It's either with your family or with la familia política, the in-laws. So, this Thanksgiving, as I say, very sincere, very emotional, but it was originally entirely commercial. It was established during the Great Depression, and it was established in order to start the great Christmas initiative, right? There are many, many retail sellers, venta al por menor, retail. Many retail sellers do 50% of their business, 50% of their business in December, right? All of that leading up to Christmas. And remember that Christmas time in Spain goes until Epiphany, right? 2 weeks longer than in the United States. In the United States, generally on the 25th, it's kind of over. That's it. So we need this time between the fourth Thursday in November, Thanksgiving, and the 25th of December. That has to be entirely commercial, right? Spain? No, Spain, it goes until the 6th of January. It's extended. And, so you roll it out for a long, long time. But, we have to compress it, and it begins deliberately. It begins in Thanksgiving. That's what it was about initially. Thanksgiving, the way it is celebrated as a holiday, was initially meant as an economic stimulus during the Great Depression. Before that, during the American Civil War, the War of Succession, the war between the states, there were pressure groups, one woman in particular, who was determined to convince Abraham Lincoln, the president of the Union, to commemorate Thanksgiving as a way to unify the nation. So, yes, this initiative had begun in the middle of the 19th century. But now we're talking about the original Thanksgiving, the real Thanksgiving, back in 1621. That was a 3-day celebration with the Wampanoag people. And they, the governor, Edward Winslow, wrote, "God be praised, we had good increase of Indian corn, and our barley, centeno, cebada, our barley, cebada, indifferent good, and our peas, guisante, not worth gathering, but they came up very well, blossomed, our harvest, cosecha, being got in. The governor sent 4 men hunting birds so that we might, after a special manner, rejoice together when we had gathered the fruits of our labors. And, we exercised our arms, many of the Indians coming among us, and their greatest king, Massasoit, with some 90 men, whom for 3 days we entertained and feasted. They went out and killed 5 deer, ciervos, which they brought to the plantation and gave our governor." And so this idea of Thanksgiving is something participatory, a sort of a reconciliation and celebration among different peoples. That's what makes it special. That was the original Thanksgiving, which, of course, was in September, because it was a harvest festival, the cosecha. And you never, never get a harvest. Come on. At the end of November? No. No. The end of November, as I say, the choice of the end of November for Thanksgiving was entirely commercially motivated. More ships began to arrive with more pilgrims, and many of the Indians were not happy. The first generation died, and the following generation was not happy at all. There began to be skirmishes, escarmuzas, and problems. So, yes, at one point, they saw a ship. A ship that was leaving shore, and she was apparently filled with Indians, and she was not sailing correctly. So the captain of another ship, in a trading expedition, the captain, John Oldham, decided that he was going to capture this ship. He knew how to sail, and the breeze was in his favor. He decided to do what the ancient Romans used to do when they wanted to board a ship, which is simply to ram against it, to hit it, como si fuera un ariete, no? Ram is carnero or ariete, and to ram against the side of the ship. Now, the Indians who were trying to sail for the very first time had not expected this. And six of them jumped into the sea and were immediately drowned. The captain, Gallup, and his men began to fire on the Indians who went below decks, right? Who went inside into the la bodega, right? The hold of the ship. This was the first sea fight on record in what would later be the United States. So yes, the locals had become pirates, and they were going to learn the skills of the Europeans. When they were finally able to board the ship and take it over, they discovered the captain, a man named Oldham. He had been killed and mutilated, but two boys who were with him on the ship were unharmed. Probably they were there to be kidnapped or integrated into the tribe and used as interpreters. But yes, the first American sea fight on record. Now, this was the work of the Pequot Indians, and the war, the first big war with the locals, was going to be the Pequot War. I'll have to take a break now, but I'll be speaking about that in just a couple of minutes.
Ahora más oportunidades de aprender inglés donde y cuando quieras mediante un formato mixto y por teléfono. Clases telefónicas Vaughan. Combina conversaciones fluidas junto con las correcciones propias del método Vaughan, cuya naturaleza dinámica y 100% interactiva lo convierten en la mejor opción para este formato de clase. Recuerda que el signo distintivo de nuestras clases es la calidad del profesor. En Vaughan no es suficiente con un alto nivel de inglés. Nuestro estándar es la excelencia. Todos nuestros profesores son nativos y atraviesan un riguroso proceso de formación en clases telefónicas. Clases telefónicas de Vaughan. Ahora donde quieras, cuando quieras, pero con Vaughan. Llama al 91-133-5833. 91-133-5833 para Madrid o llama al 933398687 339-8687 para Barcelona.
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no pruebas nuestro curso trimestral de Vaughan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening y speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que... pues que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3... Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Mucha gente nos pregunta si es posible que un método online para aprender inglés funcione de verdad. Hoy en nuestro especial Vaughan Key Points hablamos de este tema con nuestro profesor y director de innovación, Richard Brown.
La clave de nuestro método online es la motivación. Hemos diseñado un curso que realmente engancha en cada nivel, te motiva y reta para que avances de nivel. Pero la verdadera clave son los profesores Vaughan. Su método de enseñanza es lo que realmente nos diferencia. Los cursos online Vaughan cuentan con los mismos profesores apasionados que desde hace más de 40 años nos han hecho diferentes. Descubre las ventajas de nuestro método online probándolo. Así que os invito a entrar en grupovaughan.com y poneros a prueba.
Si tiene hijos recién licenciados o en su último año de carrera, asegúrese de que resuelvan, ahora que pueden, su dominio del inglés. Es importante quitar este problema de en medio ahora, antes de que entren en el mercado laboral. Si no, lo más probable es que nunca lo resuelvan.
Eso es lo más probable si sigues dejando el inglés para más adelante. Sí, sí, ya lo solucionaré. Decimos eso constantemente. Llámenos 911-33-5833. 911-33-5833.
Con nuestro MIP, nuestro Máster en Inglés Profesional, resolverás de por vida tu preocupación por el inglés. Podrás desenvolverte sin problemas. Quítate en medio el inglés ahora, en cuanto puedas. El Máster en Inglés Profesional de Vaughan.
Welcome back. This is Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams. And on the first part of the program, I was speaking about the relations between the original pilgrims in Plymouth Plantation and the Puritans who came over in the first wave to Massachusetts, looking for a new world, a new way of life, a way to live in accordance with their principles. And the natives who were there initially, the relations were very, very good. But after, say, a generation, they did begin to deteriorate, and especially with the tribe called the Pequots and the Pequot Wars. Now, things are going to go from bad to worse. I just mentioned the incident in which the Pequots were trying to hijack a sailing ship. That's enormously ambitious, and you can imagine the bravery of somebody would, that's like trying to hijack a starship, you know, something that you might see in a science fiction film, where humans go into the alien ship and try and adapt it for their own uses. Well, in this case, it did not work. And, well, again, some of the people
in remote areas were massacred. And punitive expeditions were ordered. Under Governor Endicott, the home of the Pequots, the perpetrators of these murders, their villages were destroyed, their crops, cultivos, were destroyed. At least 40 of the natives were killed, and people were not happy. Because they said, all you have really done is to take a el avispero, to take the wasp's nest and kick it. And then you leave while the wasps rise up around our ears. So, yes, that's the thing. The Pequots began to try to look for alliances, alliances with their neighbors, the Narragansetts. The Narragansetts had been neutral until this time. From the very beginning, they had been neutral. And, you know, there was one. Okay, within the Pilgrims, there was a certain amount of dissent, right? There was a lot of argument, a lot of dissent, and some of it was allowed. Others were not. There was one called Roger Williams. Roger Williams was convinced that practically everybody was going to hell. This Calvinist idea that there are only very, very few people who are elect, right? They were elect before they were born. God knows everything. And this is not a question of albedrío, libre albedrío, or las obras, right, as in the as the Catholic Church believes. But no, there is predestination. And it's just a question of knowing who is predestined or not. The consensus among the Puritans was that you can pretty much know if a person is predestined to go to heaven because of the way he acts. If he acts in a Puritan way, right, if he acts in a godly way, yeah, this is an indication that he will go to heaven. Not always, but it's a good indication. Williams was not convinced. Williams was pretty sure that everybody was going to hell except him. And he and his wife. And sometimes he was not sure about his wife. In any case, he came to the conclusion that everything in the world was so detestably corrupt that it didn't really matter. And so he began to practice toleration. It's like, de perdidos al río, no? So, yeah, he said, you know, why not? Everybody's going to hell, including you. Everybody is going to go to hell, so why not? We can tolerate these people. And they expelled him. He went to Rhode Island. And there in Rhode Island, he founded another colony based on the idea of tolerance. A person who was so intolerant that he decided why not practice tolerance. Rhode Island was famous for its tolerance, and there were all kinds of people there. No coincidence. Rhode Island had the first synagogue, the first group of Jews. They were, by the way, Sephardic Jews, right? Jews originally Spanish, then Portuguese, of course, the expelled. I don't know where this particular group came from, but very probably from the Netherlands. That was the first synagogue in what was later the United States, there in Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island would not have survived, again, without the goodwill of the locals. Williams appreciated the Indians, and they appreciated him. He had nothing but hospitality and respect for them. And when it was time for the Pequot to rise up, the Puritans asked Roger Williams to intervene, to make sure that other tribes, like the Narragansett, did not go in to the side of the Pequots. And yes, these men who had, months before, they had driven him into exile, Williams wanted to help them and prevent the Pequots from obtaining their alliance with the Narragansetts. At the risk of his own life, he went to the home of the Narragansett sachem 3 days and three nights. He mixed with them, and he was there, and the Pequots were there. The Narragansetts listened to him, and they listened to the Pequots. There was a debate. Finally, the Narragansett decided to maintain their neutrality in this conflict. And that was a very, very good thing for the Englishmen. You have to realize what had changed, especially with the arrival of the Dutch. The Dutch had established themselves on the Hudson River. The Hudson River Valley was filled with Dutch people. Albany was now a major Dutch trading post. And, of course, later on, New Amsterdam, going to be New York in a short time. But New Amsterdam also established. Now, what the Dutch wanted was furs, right? Fur is a piel con pelo. They wanted furs, and they were willing to pay for those furs. And this changed the entire nature of economic relations among their neighbors. So, north and south of the Hudson River, everything was on a different economic footing back then. It was a trade economy. It was not a subsistence economy the way it had been. The Pequot were the allies of the Dutch, and with Dutch help, they had subjugated dozens and dozens of other tribes who were now working for them in this trade. Naturally, when the English came, the enemies of the Pequot wanted the Pequot to be eliminated. When the English entered on the scene, those tribes were looking for some kind of allegiance to shift the balance of regional power. The immediate impetus of the war, of course, was, as I mentioned, the killing of English people. But the war itself was commercial and inevitable, simply exacerbated by the presence of the English. Naturally, this incident, the burning and destruction of the villages and the crops, naturally there was a response, and English crops, English houses were burnt. The war lasted 11 months and involved thousands of people with battles, fixed battles, and sort of guerra de guerrillas over thousands of square miles. In the first 6 months of the war, the Pequot won every battle against the English. Very surprising, because they did not have firearms, but they did have really extraordinary strategy and tactics. They were familiar with the European way of doing things, maybe because of their allegiance with the Dutch, who knows. But the Pequot is the first time that the English had confronted Native Americans, Native American tactics, weapons, battle formation. However, the Pequot had already seen Europeans, and they had already fought with the Dutch, and they were experts in their own terrain. Their mobility was a great advantage, and they were able to neutralize the European advantage in terms of firearms. So yeah, for every Pequot warrior who fell, dozens of English suffered, or at least at the beginning. Initially, there was a certain amount of respect for women and children, but later that disappeared. In the end, 1637, May 1st, yeah, it was the first time that women and children were killed, and this was serious. So there was going to be an attempt to completely destroy the Pequot homeland, their territory, where they were all staying together. A force of 77 soldiers, 77 English soldiers, and something like 250 allies, Native American allies, attacked and burned the Pequot village in Connecticut, Mystic, Connecticut. This was without quarter, right? Sin cuartel. This was a battle without quarter. This was a massacre. This was kill as many of the enemy as possible. At least 175 women and children, and a total of at least 500 of the enemy. In other words, they didn't have a chance. Because this was considered a refugio, right, a safe haven for these people, a shelter. Again, they were sitting ducks, presa fácil. Somebody set fire, and in less than half an hour, many, if not most, of these people were burnt to death. So yes, this was absolute devastation, for which the Pequot people would never recover. Now, following this massacre, the English had to go home. They were deep in enemy territory, and their escape or withdrawal, this is called retirada, withdrawal. To draw is tirar de algo, no? Obviously, trazar, dibujar, but draw is also tirar de algo. Por eso, cajón is called a drawer. Draw And to withdraw is como retirar. Retirar dinero, to make a deposit, to make a withdrawal. To make a withdrawal in a battlefield is una retirada. So the battle of the English withdrawal, with all of the remaining Pequot trying to kill as many of them as possible. The ships were about 11 kilometers away. And as I say, the battle took 10 hours. In this battle, the Pequot lost about half of their remaining fighting men. As I say, the result of this war was the complete disintegration of their tribe. But many, many, many of the English died as well. The result of the Pequot War was a significant victory for the English, considered that. But it was a Pyrrhic victory. For one thing, it convinced many that it was an us or them sort of situation, that further attempts at living together was not going to be possible, not viable. Now, certainly in 1662, when the new king, Metacom, his name was Metacom, but everybody called him Philip. Philip took power in 1662. He believed that the allegiance that had been standing under his father and his father's father for a generation, the allegiance with the English was not being honored, that the colonists were being dishonest, and as I say, it was an us or them situation. Philip spoke English, spoke good English. Philip, in many ways, Philip wore English clothing when it suited him. He knew very, very much about the English. So he was a child of both worlds. Now, at this time, the colonies were expanding, and the relations with the Wampanoag, remember Massasoit, right, who had simply adored the colonists, well, all of that was over. The Wampanoag now were considered potentially hostile. They were ordered to give any guns that they might have to the colonists. There was a native, an Indian called John Sassamon, who had converted to Christianity and was, he considered by the Indians to be un soplón, no, a stool pigeon, considered, well, not very highly regarded by the Indians. For one reason or another, he was found killed. And the colonists took it on themselves to find the murderers and hang them. Now, normally, this would have been done under Indian jurisdiction because it was an Indian crime. But no, because Sassamon had converted to Christianity, because he was more of a settler, let's put it that way, more English than Indian, well, they, found the three men who did it and hanged them. Summary judgment. King Philip led an uprising of various tribes, not just the Wampanoag, but the Narragansett, the Nipmuc, the Pocumtuck, an amalgam of tribes. The war can be regarded as a final attempt to get rid of the colonists once and for all. It is considered the deadliest war in American history. More people died in other wars, but proportionately, this was with many villages, men, women, children. Everybody lost somebody. And of course, the devastation among the Indian tribes was such that afterwards it was much, much easier for the Europeans to take over their lands. In the end, Philip was killed. In the end, of course, the colonists won. And his head was put on a spike. His head was put on a pole and displayed there in Plymouth Colony for a total of 2 decades. So, 2 decades, you could go into the colony of so-called Puritans, of godly people, and right there in the middle you would see the skull, calavera, el cráneo, the skull of this enemy. This led to a certain militarization, right? There were militia. People, they were called train bands, pelotones, no? From 64 to 200 men, including all men capable of firing a weapon between the ages of 16 and 60, required to have arms and ammunition at home. Right? They were required to know how to use a gun, how to shoot. All of this is going to go into later American history, folklore, and the idea